Hi, this is Mark Zavon from Phil Devil Hill, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. Focus on Metal!
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to episode 238 of Focus on Metal. Hope you enjoyed our talks last week with Joey Vera and Fang Von Rathenstein. And if you haven't done so, definitely have to go out and pick yourselves up copies of Wind Hands Down from Armored Saint, as well as Frostburn from Lords of the Trident. I have to say that, boy, you know, Wind Hands Down has been tearing up the Twitter zone lately. Just everybody really excited about that album. And if you want a little bit of audio visual entertainment from either one of those, you could go up to focusonmetal.blogspot.com. And on the episode link for last week's show, I also put up the video for Wind Hands Down, as well as the track Light This City off of Frostburn. So you can go up there and check those out. So this week, once again, we have two great guests. Like last week, a returning guest, as well as somebody we've never had on the show before. Well, it's call it two guests, but it's really kind of like more one and a half guests, but that whole thing will become very apparent shortly. Let's just say that when Skype is great, it's great. And when it sucks, it really sucks. So without further ado, let's get right into our first guest this week.
Hi, this is Zeb from the band Ornogan, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
That's right. Our returning guest this week is none other than Zeb from the great band Ornogan. We had him on the show when their last release came out, had a great talk, just an incredible release. And in that interview, we did talk about what the writing was like for the next release as well. And, you know, looking at that conversation and listening back to this new album, he definitely did not disappoint. So back a few months ago, they put out a brand new album. It's called Ravenhead, and it is much heavier than To the End, and just an amazing slab of classic German metal.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, Steve, how are we doing today?
Thank you. I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing good. It's great to be able to talk to you again. I know I talked to you back when the last album came out, To the End, and I'm definitely psyched to be talking to you about this one.
Yeah, I remember.
I got to say that right off the bat, you know, I put this one in and it's so much heavier than the last one. I think it, almost the music inside is really reflective of the cover.
Yeah, I would say it's the other way around. We knew that before, that this one is going to be like a lot heavier than To the End was. Mm. And so, yeah, we wanted to have a cover artwork that tells you that this is like the fist in the face, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely it is. As soon as I put it on, it was just like, wow. Like, he wasn't kidding when he talked about how the next one was just going to be this whole new level. And just definitely this thing does it on just at every level of it. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. And the tracks, too, I'm really loving Ravenhead. Fever is incredible. Those two are just probably two of my favorites. At the End of the World is also another great one. But definitely, it's hard to pick, you know. And as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, oh, well, now I'm really liking this one, and I'm really liking that one. But I think you guys took this one up a whole another level when you did this one.
Well, thank you very much. And you just mentioned a couple of things that are really worth mentioning that are really funny. I think when we had the demo already for Here at the End of the World, Timo from AFM Records said that this is probably the song that he would delete from the record because he thinks it's not up to the Ornogan standards. And I was like, you know, I do think that this is a great chorus and it sticks in your head, and we definitely will put that on the record. And he was like, you know, I think this is the worst song you've ever written. And I was like, okay, yeah, if you say so. And the interesting thing is that especially Here at the End of the World and also Evil Lies and Every Man, that the guys at AFM Records also didn't like, that are the two songs that are always pointed out by journalists, I mean, all over the globe, you know. So this is really funny that you say it as well, that you like the one. And yeah, but the other thing that I wanted to mention, as you said what you just said, is that it was really, really hard for us to pick a song for the video clip because we had the same impression. You know, I mean, when we did to the end, it was crystal clear that the things we believe in is the really outstanding track, you know, right. that... Yeah, the one that really sticks in your head, and that had to be the single. And it was more difficult with this one, but I think we made the right choice with Siva.
Oh yeah, and it's an insane video as well. I definitely urge anybody to go up and watch that one. And just the way you incorporated the album art, that whole theme in there as well. And of course, you know, me being a musician, the first thing I was like, oh my God, like all the dirt on the instruments. I was like, how do you get all that off the drum set and stuff? But
no way, no chance. We threw it away after that. It was just, yeah, really.
And no yeah, I urge anyone to go in and see that, because like all the videos that you guys have put out, it's just, you guys have really just raised the bar on, you know, metal bands today doing videos, and you really put a lot of thought and a lot of care into them. They're definitely not this quick toss off kind of video. There's a lot there. You could probably watch that thing 5-6 times and see like new little things in the background and stuff every time you do it. Just an amazing, well done video. And you guys can, you know, it can tell that you guys are all about the quality of everything you do.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It's always nice to have someone on the phone who realizes how much work.
And then we had Skype dropout number one.
Hello.
Hey, Steve, let's see if we can keep the connection this time.
Let's see. So it's perfect on my side. I had like, I don't know, like 4 interviews before and it was all fine. So
yeah, it's really weird because usually I'll start to hear somebody break up a little bit and then it just drops it, but it's just totally dropping it like out of the blue. So it's kind of odd. I don't know. Anyways, all right, let's keep trying to go on this anyways. Definitely want to let people know about this. You know, I know that one thing you guys had a really good luck with over the last year or so was all the live appearances. Are you planning on bringing this out live this year for the folks?
And there was Skype dropout number 2. And then we tried several times to try to get a connection. Couldn't get anything to stick for more than a couple of seconds. So Skype this time, it sucked. But that's the explanation behind my half a guess statement is I, you know, was scheduled to do a full 30-minute interview with Seeb. Didn't even get anything close to that. However, it's a great album. And I've just kind of been sitting on these two chunks of audio for a while. And, I never got rid of them. And then I just decided this week, you know what, I'm going to run that anyways, just so people can hear a little bit of what Steve discusses with Ravenhead. Let people know about Ravenhead. It's a great release off of AFM. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to take these two little pieces and put them on the front end and just kind of use them as the basis for... That's right. This is going to be the first week that the actual artist introduces their own track of the week. How's that? So track of the week this week obviously is going to be something off of Ravenhead by Ordnogan. Definitely an album you can't miss. Awesome cover art. It sticks with the whole theme of what they've always done with the cover and stuff. And as I said to Seep, the music inside is just as powerful as the visuals on the outside. And back at the beginning of that short chat that I managed to have with Seep, we talked about the track Here at the End of the World. And I thought, might as well let you guys hear this one. So off of the AFM release from Ordnogan called Ravenhead, this is Here at the End of the World.
So man,
There you go, a little taste of some Orton Ogun off the brand new one, Ravenhead. And speaking about great new albums, it just popped in my head as I was mixing this, is the new one from Raven, Extermination. Now, I know months ago we had John on the show talking about the new album and talking about the Kickstarter project and all that, but I now have the album in my possession. I've been able to put the physical CD into the player, crank it up, and I have to say, top to bottom, the whole album, incredible, incredible stuff. I'm talking, even if you've never been a Raven fan in the past, and I can't imagine someone who hasn't been, but there's got to be a few out there, you have to go out and have a listen to this album. It's great stuff, well worth your metal dollar. So that's the brand new one from Raven. It's called Extermination, and it is a Raven tour de force, I have to say. And also, while I'm at it, I do have to give a shout out to my metal brother, Josh Schwartz from A Sound of Thunder, for helping the Raven guys get all this together and get it out to us. The guy has done a ton of work helping them out with this, and I have to show him and to express my metal appreciation for all Josh has done to continue to help Raven bring us great classic metal.
Hey, Metal Lunatics, this is John Gallagher from Raven, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
I love that ID. The man is indeed a legend. So at the beginning of the show, you heard another ID, and that would be the ID from Mark Zavon, and he is our second guest this week. So this one's kind of interesting. Richie set this one up, and of course, you know, as Mark says in his ID, he is the guitar player from Kill Devil Hill, and you know, we've had almost everybody from Kill Devil Hill on the show. We're really big fans of the band. So Richie wanted to get him on to talk about stuff going on with KDH and everything, but then he also had another agenda. And, you know, as people know who've listened to the show for a long time know that Richie is just a pure, honest music fan. Doesn't play guitar, doesn't play drums, bass, sing, or anything like that. He's just a fan. And he comes over here to the studio and he sees all my crap everywhere. And, you know, being kind of on the outside of all this, he doesn't really get what all the excitement is about gear and all that. And he hears me talk about the NAMM show and he hears me talk about it with other artists and all of that. And now it's kind of become more of a mainstream media topic as well, much more so than it was years ago. And there's a lot of discussion about NAMM now. And I think also with the advent of YouTube, there's a lot of videos of events at NAMM and people are really starting to see a lot more of it. And people that, like Richie, who've always kind of been more on the outside of it, it's become part of their musical consciousness now. And so Richie just put the two things together of Mark from KDH and NAMM. And he thought, hey, I'm going to invite Mark to come on the show and talk about the NAMM show and what goes on and what it's like and, you know, kind of the myths and the facts and all of that. So this is going to be kind of a little bit different than our typical interview. Obviously, we're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about what's going on with Kill Devil Hill. And I should mention that we actually did this interview a few months ago, not too long after NAMM was done. So, you know, it's dated the information by a few months, but obviously we've had a lot of things going on and this one's just kind of been sitting there. But also, and kind of strangely for an interview that involves Richie, but we're also going to talk about gear and music merchandise and all of that stuff as well in the NAMM show. So, you know, I think overall, when I listen back to this, I'm like, wow, that was actually a pretty cool interview. It really gives you a lot of insight of some of the other the music culture that you may not know about or experienced or anything else like that. So a lot of great information in here. And, you know, Mark's also talking about things not only with Kill Devil Hill, but also with Metal Allegiance. And he throws out a couple of really funny stories as well. So great interview overall with Mark Zavon. And really, I mean, I'm listening back and I'm thinking, wow, like I'm just kind of a little upset with myself that we haven't run this one yet. But we're going to rectify that right now with our talk with Mark Zavon from Kill Devil Hill.
Okay, guys, once again, Richie has pulled off a really nice interview for us this evening. That is with the one and only Mark Zavon from Kill Devil Hill. And I think this makes having everybody from KDH on the show at this point, right? Did we get everybody?
No, we didn't get Dewey on yet.
Oh, that's right. We're missing Dewey. Yeah, right.
We've had Vinny. We've had Johnny. We've had Rex.
Yep.
And now we have Mark.
Yeah.
So Dewey's next.
Just how it worked out. That's kind of weird. But anyways, great to have you on the show, Mark. How are we doing tonight?
Doing great. Doing great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome.
So can you tell me what the current status is with Kill Devil Hill? Because in my opinion, the last record was fantastic.
Killer.
Absolutely killer record.
And, wow. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, it was fabulous. And, you know, are you in the studio now? Are you writing material? Or can you just tell us what the status is?
Yeah, you're basically right. We've been writing material. Dewey was just over here a couple of days ago, and we were hashing out some new stuff. And we've got some studio time booked to track some basics coming up here in about a week and a half. So, yeah, just kind of getting ready for to record some new material. We've been working on stuff since the last record. In fact, there's a couple of songs that were left over that I'd like to record. We'll see if they see the light of day. But yeah, we've got a bunch of fresh stuff as well that we've written just since, we were on that motorboat cruise back in September, and we got off and had some time off for the holidays. And so I had a bunch of time to sit around and kind of hash out ideas that have been sitting around collecting dust for a while. So
nice.
Finally get a chance to get those out here shortly.
Yeah. So of course, one of the reasons I asked you to come on was you played in a really cool show at the end of January for a Randy Rhoads tribute show. One of the first question I want to ask you about that is, how do you actually get invited to something like that? Like, do you put the feelers out and say, I'm a massive Randy Rhoads fan, if you ever do a show like this, will you ask me? Or, like, how does that exactly work that you get asked?
You know, honestly, I'm not 100% sure. I've known Brian Tichy for a while. I mean, we've done some open jams around Hollywood, and he's kind of the organizer of it and all that stuff. And I think that Brian and I, you know, he and Rex and I had done a Kiss tribute thing a while back. And I think that in talking to him, you know, it might've come up that I was a big Randy fan, and that, you know, I don't even know if he was doing it at the time or not. I can't remember, but there was no talk of actually putting it together. And then when Nam was approaching and he was putting it together, I wound up, he contacted me. I think he either texted me or emailed me and asked me if I'd do it kind of out of the clear blue sky. So I was really, you know, it's a total honor to be invited to something like that, you know, as much of an influencer as Randy was on me. I mean, like, the first record that I can remember ever putting the needle back to try and learn, you know, songs by ear was Blizzard of Oz. So to get a chance to pay tribute, you know, to his legacy along with all those other amazing guitar players that were there that night, you know, it's just a thrill and a half and a total honor, you know.
Yeah, just for our listeners, can you just name some of the other people that played that night?
Oh, let's see. Rudy Sarzo played bass most of the night, which is pretty cool. And Phil Soussan, who was also in Ozzy's band. And Brian played drums and a bunch of different singers. But guitar-wise, there was Joel Hoekstra, who's now playing with Whitesnake, played with Night Ranger. Jeff Watson from Night Ranger, who hadn't played in a while, came out and played. And Michelangelo Badio was there. And Phil X, Phil Zanitis, I know, he plays with the Drills, plays with Bon Jovi now, he's amazing, guy's a phenomenal guitar player, and I mean, there was just a whole bunch of people back there, you know. Every time I turn a corner, I'd run into somebody I knew, like Mike Orlando was there, and we had done a tour with them not too long ago, so I was shooting the breeze with him, and I don't know, I mean, there was a lot of guys there, Tracy Guns, who else? I mean, I don't know, the list goes on, I'd have to go look at the list to remember exactly.
Wasn't Alex Skolnick at it?
Yeah, Alex Skolnick was there, he's super cool too. I did Metal Allegiance when we did that cruise, we did some songs together playing up there, just like metal covers or whatever, it was kind of fun. He's awesome. A super nice guy, and amazing talent, obviously. The guy's amazing.
yeah, he definitely is. We had him on the show and had an absolute blast talking with him for almost like an hour and a half or so. We were just like going on with him. Yeah, great, great guy to have on. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a really down-to-earth cat. And it was great. They were doing some Van Halen, and like, he was just pulling out all kinds of, you know, Van Halen stuff, you know, solo pieces and, you know, riffs, and it's just like, wow, you know, all that stuff note for note, that's amazing, you know, because I mean, like, I know those songs, but I'd have to go back and, like, you know what I mean, like, make sure how everything goes. It's been so many years since I actually played that stuff.
Yeah.
But now he was pulling it out like it was nothing. And I'm like, man, mow it down, why don't you? That was killer. He's a really nice guy too, so it's always the icing on the cake.
Yeah, so Mark, tell us about rehearsing for that. Was there any rehearsals at all?
Yeah, there was one rehearsal. Basically, I think he did a few nights of rehearsals, but every incarnation kind of got a rehearsal. And like, so I was, the one song I was doing, I think I did with, one of the songs, I wound up doing some of the Savage stuff too, but was with Dave Ellison from Megadeth. And so he had just come in, and, you know, we kind of, everybody was available on the day that he came in. And so we got together and did the rehearsal that night that he was there, and worked out great. Everything came off without a hitch and no trouble. And if you come in prepared, I think everybody was able to, you know, most of the people that were invited were kind of grew up on that stuff. And even if you don't know the nuts and bolts of a song, if you've heard it enough times, it's kind of, you know, you kind of got it under your fingers automatically just because you've, you know, kind of growing up on it and whatever. But
yeah, did you have a song that you were wishing you'd be asked to play?
Actually, Brian was wanting to do You Looking at Me, Me Looking at You, which was a B-side from Blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that song, actually. When I got I had bought Blizzard of Oz on CD not too long ago. I don't know, I guess it was a few years ago, but that was the B-side that was on there. And I had never heard that song before, so I was like, wow, what's this? You know, and this is a really cool song, you know, kind of bonus materials, like a bonus track on there. And so I kind of fell in love with this song. You know, I listened to it in the car a whole bunch of times, and every time that song come on, I'd be like, man, this is cool. It's kind of like you listen to that record 150,000 times, but, you know, when you're listening to it and then there's this new gem on there, you're like, wow, this one's fresh, you know? And so it kind of hit me with that vibe. And then when Brian asked me if I wanted to do it, I was like, yeah, let me do that one. You know, that's kind of cool and fresh. And, you know, it might be fun to kind of tackle that one since it's newer in my mind, at least, you know, newer to me.
Yeah. Did they do everything on the two Randy albums? Did they do every track?
You know, I think so. I'm not 100% sure. I know Brian had a bunch of other stuff too, that was, some Quiet Riot stuff and some of the, stuff that was on the tribute record, you know, like the Sabbath tunes and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I think they probably did do every song off of, I think they did. I'm pretty sure they did. I can't imagine they would have skipped one, you know, but it was a pretty long show. I mean, it was, he's got a big catalog, more than you'd think, you know, for the short time he was here. But,
Yeah.
Definitely. And now they've decided to take it out on the road. I see they're playing some shows in the next couple of months.
Yeah. I just heard about that. Yeah. Dewey's going to go out and sing for him for a while, mm-hmm. too. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, so any chance of you maybe jumping on a couple of those shows?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think it becomes logistics, too.
Yeah.
When you can have, when you've got the NAMM show going on and you've got all these guys that are all in town all at the same time, it's really easy to put all that together and have, you know, 40 different guitarists there. But when you've got to put everybody up for the night and you got to travel, you know, it's a little bit more constricting as far as how many people you can bring. And so, I mean, it'd be an honor, of course, to be asked, but I'm, some of the guys they've got, I would go to the show just to go see the show.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of those guys, you know, Phil Demmel and those guys. Like, you know, it's going to be a great show. So I'm stoked for all those guys.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Richie, you know, he doesn't play or anything like that at all. And he comes over here at the studio and he just sees all of my crap everywhere. And he'll be like, you know, like what the hell is that little box you bought and why are you so excited about it and all that. So, so for me, you know, NAMM has always been this thing that to me is like Disneyland. And of course, Richie, that, like that whole idea of all of that's pretty new to him, but, you know, he just kind of wanted to get some insight from someone who's, who was, has been there, who's been a neutral party and not me, to really answer some questions for him about NAMM. And so he thought you would be the perfect guy to talk to about it.
Okay, yeah, I've been going for a long time before I even was, you know, in a, any kind of successful band. I managed a music store in Nebraska, and I was able to come out as a buyer and usually would buy, you know, stuff for the store for the year. And so I've been coming since like early 90s to NAMM, and at least the summer NAMM. They've got a winter NAMM, winter NAMM.
Right.
Summer NAMM is in Nashville, generally speaking. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. There's a lot of people there, and it usually winds up being like a big reunion, you know, because it's everybody musical and, you know, from all over the country or all over the world, more accurately. And so you run into all kinds of people that you never thought you'd be running into. It's like, oh man, how you doing? How you been? You know, all that. But kind of like a big high school reunion type deal, but it's a lot of fun.
I've always wanted to go, and for 2 years, Dave Reffitt has had extra tickets and been like, yeah, just come out and you know, come out with us and go and stuff. It's just been, usually he tells me like last minute and I'm looking at the budget going, yeah, that isn't going to happen. Plus by that point, I mean, you know, you're going to probably be like having to end up sleeping at the backside of Joe's Motel or something out there at that point, you know?
No doubt.
You know, so I've never been able to go, but I've definitely been dying to go, and I do get offers, you know, for doing that as well. But yeah, I mean, Richie just doesn't quite get the whole, like the whole idea behind it at all, but it's, you know, I think it's pretty amazing. So, you know, so you obviously you went this year, right?
Yeah. I was there.
You know, as far as any cool stories at all, you know, from the show that you remember or?
Well, I did a few signings and that was kind of fun. It's always cool to meet people and promote the products that you're doing. But I did one signing at Reunion Blues, and they were talking about how some guy, I'm not going to say who it was, but some guy that was signing there, I guess he was kind of hammered. And so he was signing and he had like his buddies there with him. I guess he decided he needed to take a leak. So he just stood up and turned around and his buddies kind of crowded right next to him. And he just took a leak right there on the carpet.
I wouldn't hand him my pen then to sign the next one.
Yeah, I heard that story. I was like, no way, man. That's great.
Yeah, Mark, I want to ask you about, you see all the videos that get put up with the jams that happen at NAMM. How last minute are they? Like, are a lot of them organized beforehand?
I think it runs the gamut. You know what I mean? Like, they set that, some of that stuff up like a year ahead of time, and companies that are trying to, you know, push a certain product or have certain artists, you know, they'll line all that stuff up and they'll have rehearsals ahead of time and everything's all set up. And then you got, you know, the kind of high school reunion vibe, like I said, that, you know, somebody's walking by and you haven't seen, you know, and, oh, get up and jam a song with us, you know, and so there's that as well. But a lot of it's kind of prescribed, you know, a lot of it's, especially the NAMM associated events, they've got all that stuff wired pretty tight.
Yeah, but I think some of the stuff that happens in the individual booths, though, I think you got some of that that's more kind of unplanned, right?
Yeah, a little more spontaneous that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, anything can happen, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely I know, like what you were saying, yeah, the main stage stuff is definitely all planned out.
Right, exactly. Like, Schecter usually has a big party every year, and, you know, there's like, it's like a NAMM jam or whatever. Like, they'll get down at the Grove of Anaheim. It's like this big venue out by Angel Stadium, and, you know, that they usually have a big Saturday night. You know, well, most of the weekend nights, actually, there's usually some big one on down there. And, you know, it's definitely, you've got a lot to choose from. You know what I mean? When you on, especially the weekend nights, there's a lot of, you know, great bands playing or jams or, you know, and sometimes the bills are, you know, kind of odd, you know, like you might have a fusion band playing with a metal band, or you might have, you know, sometimes, you know, the way it stacks up is a little different, but the common thread is always great music, you know, and
right.
I think especially a NAMM crowd sees through, you know, past those borders and stuff a little bit better than most.
Right.
Yeah, so have you ever met any players there that, like, you're kind of nervous to meet or you're, like, a little bit speechless?
Oh, yeah. I've met Steve Morse there a couple of times, and, you know, I always have been a huge fan of his work, and, you know, but he's another guy that's just super down to earth, regular guy, super nice, always has a smile and plenty of time to take a picture with you or sign something. You know, it's been my experience that some of the best players I've ever met are the nicest guys, you know, and I'm fortunate for that because I've heard horror stories from people about, you know, oh, I idolized so-and-so and then I finally met him and you know, he told me, you know, like to get out of his way or, you know, like was just kind of rude to them and ruined their whole, you know, kind of opinion of them. And that's a shame when that sort of thing happens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you're right, Steve Morris, I mean, that was one of the things that always strikes me about when you see him. Anytime you're playing, the guy just has this grin on his face that never leaves his face the whole set. No matter what's going on that night, the guy has just got like this permanent, like Cheshire Cat grin going. It's amazing.
Hell, if I could play that good, I wouldn't stop smiling either.
So, you know, obviously you've got, you know, certain brands that you've, you know, have endorsements for and all that kind of stuff. Was there anything that really like was big on your hit list that you saw this year at the show?
There are a few things that I had on my list that that I was able to check out and was glad I did because they were everything that people had said they were cracked up to be. You know, it was a great opportunity to kind of see everything in one spot, you know, rather than having to run around to music stores or chase around or get something on spec, you know, through the internet or calling a company directly. They've all got a booth there. You can go there, you can check stuff out and find out, you know, what's working, what's not working. But, you know, I actually made a few connections that I didn't expect to make, you know, ran into some people. And then I didn't run into some people that I expected to run into and then wound up connecting with them afterwards. And that wound up being kind of fruitful for me too. So, but though, you know, there's always a bunch of gadgets and contraptions and stuff like that, you know, automatic tuning machines for guitars, that, you know, tune guitar to different tunings while you're playing and all kinds of crazy stuff. But I stayed busy just doing my own thing and, you know, checking out some of the stuff I wanted to, you know, 'cause there were some top shelf guitar companies I really wanted to check out and, you know, just some of the recording stuff, microphones, you know, I definitely made some connections with some microphone companies and stuff like that. And so I'm excited about that, especially with recording coming up. Since we're going to be in the studio, I'll have an opportunity to really, you know, suss these mics out and decide what I like the best. And I like to track guitars, you know, here in my house. I've got a studio here and where we do all our demoing. And I did some of the guitars for the last record, not all of them, but probably be doing most of the new ones here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, definitely.
Yeah, it's always good to, if you have a chance to be able to check out mics and stuff, especially for recording guitars. You know, sometimes it isn't even the close mics, but a lot of times if you're doing, like, you know, what really picks up good ambient sounds in your studio with it as well. So when you do that second track and just kind of make it fuller and stuff like that, and it's nice to be able to check out different mics and find out, you know, what really sounds good in your room.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. That's cool. The one thing I always heard from folks at NAMM is that even though a lot of the stuff is there and you can see a lot of people, that with so much going on, you might see a great piece of gear and you'd love to delve into it more and get your questions answered. But it's just like you can never get someone's time enough to really find out fully about what the heck that thing is and you know, how to really use it.
Right. The other obstacle is noise, because it is really loud. Like, it is extremely tough to listen to the finer points of, let's say, you know, microphone preamp or something like that. Even with headphones, it's difficult because it's just so noisy there in the environment. You know, there's so many people walking around, and I mean, I try not to even go in the drum hall. There's like a whole hall dedicated to drums, but you can imagine, you know, 1,000 drummers trying out cymbals and drums at the same time. You can imagine how noisy it gets.
They had a nice successful show this year over in Europe. And you know how you got like Music Mess over there, which is kind of like NAMM times three. And but one of the complaints that they had there, and the same thing you had, was, you know, in checking out like guitars, and I'm sure you do the same thing that I do. A lot of times, you know, the first thing you do when you pick up a guitar is you listen to how it sounds like acoustically, even an electric one. You want to just kind of hear the overall tone of it before you plug it in and stuff. And of course, you look at a lot of the great high-end makers for guitars, and the first thing you want to do is really just kind of sit there and strum it and hear it, you know, vibrate and how it sounds acoustically and stuff. And so they had a first time they did this year is this conglomeration of guitar makers over there in Europe had a show where in the main room there was no amplifiers at all. So you could just really sit down with guitars, and then they had different amp rooms. So if you wanted to really hear an instrument, you went off and you could play it, but separate off the show floor. And everybody that I've heard feedback from on that, including, you know, both people that were there and dealers, was it made it for a lot less stressful event. And people really, really liked that whole idea of doing it that way.
Wow. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And especially with some of those big, you know, high-end guitars where you're going to be laying down like 10 bills for it. You really want to be able to hear it good, you know?
Yeah. You got to hear those finer points to really know if you want to make that decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark, is there any day in NAMM where, like, I could walk in, like, as you know, as a general public guy?
It's not open to the public, but it's not impossible to get in there either. You know, I mean, if you know people in the music business, and I assume you do, you could certainly get hooked up with somebody. Because basically, if you, for me, when I was a buyer, when I worked at a music store, all I had to do was order the passes. There was a NAMM, you know, companies pay a certain amount to NAMM every year for a membership, and then you get as many passes as you need within a certain time frame. You have to order them ahead of time. But if you know somebody that's either in the retailing, or if they're, you know, a music merchandiser, if they make equipment, or, you know, anybody who's going to be going to NAMM who's got a membership, can get you a badge as long as you're looking for it. You know, you want to be looking around, you know, October or November, you know, is the best time to be. Not, you know, January, the day before NAMM is really tough, because usually what happens is those companies run out of badges, and then it costs them, you know, $50 or $100 a badge to get one, you know, at that point, because it's kind of late in the game.
Yeah.
But when I was going years ago, it wasn't nearly as strict as it is now. Now they can check photo IDs, you know, back then they just, you know, you could pretty much almost just photocopy a pass and get in. I mean, it was really easy, But we got as many as we wanted at the music store I worked at. So, you know, I would get a few extra. And then when I'd run into friends out in L.A., I'd be like, hey, I got an extra badge if you need it, you know. And then, you know, it's not that difficult, you know, to get a badge if you just, you know somebody in the music business and think about it early. Those are the two key ingredients.
Yeah, so would you have seen years ago some overzealous fans, let's put it that way, get in there and kind of bow down in front of guys and what have you? Would you have seen some of that over the years?
Yeah, there's definitely been some of that. You know, sometimes you'll be walking down an aisle, and all of a sudden there's a giant traffic jam, and it's like, what's going on here? You know, you can't get through, and it's just, what's going on? And then, you know, oh, it's Eddie Van Halen over there, you know what I mean? Or Stevie Wonder, or somebody's walking through, and, you know, there's a giant crowd around them just following him wherever he goes. I mean, I almost feel bad for people like that because there's no way for them to enjoy the show, no matter, you know, how many bodyguards they bring or whatever. You can't move freely through and check things out because, you know, you've got 100 people everywhere you go that want an autograph and a photo.
Yeah.
And there's just no anonymity left for those cats. And so, you know, I feel for them.
So as far as this year's NAMM goes, like, who'd be the big names at it as guitar players?
What do you mean?
Like, would Steve Vai be at it? Like, really, really popular players, if you know what I mean? Like, icons?
I don't know. I mean, I saw John Petrucci signing over at Music Man.
Yeah.
And like I said, I saw Steve Morris, you know, and...
would Joe Satriani be there, or...
He might be. I mean, I didn't really seek those guys out. I guess I'm a little jaded, but I don't chase that stuff around so much like I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they were there. You know, generally speaking, those guys will make an appearance for some of their bigger endorsements, you know, for whoever it might be. You know, I don't know, you know, if Steve Vai's doing Carbon amp still, you know, like he's been doing. Maybe he'd do an appearance at their booth and so on and so forth. I don't know what everybody's schedule was this year necessarily. Like I said, I happened to run into those two, you know, see those two guys signing at a booth. It's tough enough, especially nowadays, since I've actually got to do some signings myself and stuff, to get through the show and check everything off my list that I want to see. And not miss everything by the time it's, you know, Sunday and it's time for me to leave.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a whole show.
I mean, it's just, You know,
yeah.
I mean, even if you have all 3 days and it wasn't you having to also do stuff, if you were just a guy going in there, it's almost impossible for just someone from a music store going in to see what they want to carry the next year to actually see the whole show. It's just, it's at least the winter one is huge. Maybe the summer NAMM, you have half a chance, but the winter NAMM is just so big.
Right. And there's always the X factor of, okay, I've got X amount of hours, I'm going to go to the show, I'm going to do this. But then you run into your buddy you haven't seen in 20 years or 15 years or whatever. Mm. And he's like, oh, come on, let's go have a drink. Oh, man, I'll have a drink. And then you run into some other people. Oh, I saw you guys play, whatever. Can you, you know, take a picture with me? I'll take a picture with my wife and so on. And so the time you thought you had starts to kind of erode, you know what I mean? Until you're like, oh, man, I've got to scramble before they close this thing down at 6. If I want to catch my last couple of booths, you know, and see whatever that, you know, whatever it is that I'm looking for. But, and don't get me wrong, I got no regrets. It's always a pleasure, you know, to and it's great running into people that I've known for years and fans and stuff. I mean, it's awesome, you know, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, kind of, you know, having everybody there at one time. And so it's a great opportunity to reconnect with people and to make new connections as well. But yeah, you gotta start early if you want to check everything off your list. You know?
Yeah. So, Mark, do you find then that it's great for collaborating? You know, you said you played on the Metal Allegiance, some of the shows. Do you think a lot of that, like, is, like, you know, the feelers are put out at NAMM and then it goes from there?
Yeah. You know, on the Metal Allegiance thing, I think that there's a couple of guys in particular who are in charge of that, you know, and they were, you know, in fact, the first time I met one of them was when he was working at Samson in Harkeep, you know, as an artist rep. So, you know, there's a lot of connection there. But, you know, and I think that's an easy way for somebody to make connections with a bunch of artists, you know, is if you've got a bunch of artists that are endorsed by a company and you're an artist relations cat, then you've probably got a bunch of phone numbers and it's easy, you know, to make phone calls and set these things up. Because it's a lot of fun, you know, playing covers that everybody grew up on, you know, like, you know, Priest and Zeppelin and, you know, you name it, you know, all that stuff that, you know, that everybody kind of already knows, you know. I think we played Hell's Bells or I don't know. I mean, there's a bunch of just really cool, you know, cover songs and it was a lot of fun, you know, everybody getting up and, or Highway to Hell, that's what it was. Everybody gets up and plays the song at the end, and there's like 8 guitar players and, you know, 4 bass players and 2 drummers, and it's just like, what is this? You know, but it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the songs, and you just get up there and have a blast, and the fans love it too, and it's really cool, you know. So getting a chance to be any part of that for me, you know, because I'm kind of low guy on the totem pole. You know, I just love being involved and getting a chance to hang out with these guys. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a fan. I bought all their records, you know, when I was younger, and I still love their playing today. So
yeah, there seems awesome. To be a lot more of these shows now where all these musicians get together, and, you know, they'll, especially you see it in South America and South Africa and even some parts of Asia, where all these musicians get together and they play shows. Can you see that happening more now in the States? Like the Metal Allegiance thing seems to be taking off. Can you see more of those shows happening in the future, do you think?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, as long as people enjoy doing it and the fans enjoy going to see it,
yeah,
I don't see any reason to stop it, you know. I think probably it'll continue as long as the market will bear it, you know. And honestly, I don't see anybody stopping, you know, enjoying playing those songs anytime soon, yeah. Truthfully.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. It's tough. I mean, and I feel bad for a new band starting out because, you know, it's great to go see all the old stuff, you know, kind of pay tribute to that stuff and homage to the greats. But at the same time, it makes the way the music business is now, it makes it difficult for a new band starting out with the original material to try and measure up, you know, or to try and even just get a record out and go out to it to support it because the backing just isn't there like it used to be. So, you know, I think there's almost more of a market for that stuff that we were talking about than there is for new music.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, a new band coming out, there's really no, you know, there isn't the MTV outlet. There isn't really a radio outlet now because they just play whatever kind of stupid pablum that comes out. So there, it's just live. And how does a new band get across that, you know, they're out there, they're touring, you know, come see us kind of thing. It's definitely just a hard road.
Yeah, it is definitely. Yeah. But I mean, music is its own reward too. I mean, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, it makes it worth the sacrifice to those who really love it for what it is, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's definitely a harder road than it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, you did get paired up, I think it was last year, with one of my new favorite bands was King. You played some shows with them.
Those guys are great.
Oh, they're tremendous, tremendous act. Yeah. So hopefully you'll be touring now and the new album comes out. Any idea when the album might be coming out? Maybe the fall?
I don't know off the top of my head. Honestly, you know, we're just kind of recording stuff as it comes right now, you know, just kind of instead of going in and doing a full record, you know, we're just going to chip away at it a few songs at a time, you know, when we've all got holes in our schedule. Because honestly, you know, everybody's pretty busy. So, you know, we're just trying to figure out, you know, how we can, you know, keep chipping away at the stone and keep it going, you know. So, yeah, we're going to record a few songs, probably 3 or 4 songs in this next session we got in a few weeks, like I told you guys about in a couple weeks. And and go from there, you know, and that way, you know, and truthfully, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, whether we're going to do a release another full length record per se, or, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of bands that are just releasing one song at a time, you know,
right.
So
yeah.
Maybe we'll do something along those lines and kind of, you know, keep the ball rolling, you know, and keep people interested and give fans something to get excited about. I mean, like, I like that myself, you know, when a band kind of, you know, puts out something on a regular basis and it holds my interest.
Yeah.
So, you know, I find that's an interesting way now that, you know, a lot of people are getting their music through the internet and, you know, social media is such a big part of that, you know, it's kind of fun to get excited about something on a regular basis. And when you put out a record, you know, back in the day when you didn't have the internet and all that stuff, you sit there with that record and listen to it and, you know, kind of go through the lyrics and read the liner notes and, you know, and it's like a big thing, you know, but now with the internet, it's kind of a, what have you done for me lately kind of world. And
yeah.
So you know, it's easier to keep up if you kind of, you know, put out one thing at a time rather than, you know, shoot the whole ball of wax at one shot, you know?
Yeah. So is the, as far as the writing process now, is it been a little bit different with Johnny involved as opposed to having Vinny on drums, or is that just kind of slotted in really nice?
Well, Johnny's great. I love Johnny and he's a perfect fit for us, but him being in the Vinny makes it a little bit more difficult, than it was with Vinny. Vinny would come over and work on the songs and he'd have ideas and, you know, kind of interject those. And you know, we work with that, you know, like he'd have an idea for a guitar part. You know, I need a creepy guitar part here or something, you know what I mean? And that was nice. I like that, you know, but with Johnny being in New Jersey, you know, it's kind of a little bit more difficult. We do the email thing, and I just sent him some stuff, some rough stuff that that Dewey and I were working on. I told you he was just over here working a couple days ago, but and hopefully Johnny will have some ideas too to contribute. I mean, obviously he's going to contribute his drum parts, and I can't wait because he's a great drummer and super stoked to hear what he's going to do on this stuff, because most of the stuff demo wise, I wind up just kind of, you know, programming the drums myself, just all MIDI kind of stuff, and you know, get it so that it's up and running as a demo idea before, you know, anybody ever gets, you know, because you never know whether it's going to be one that's going to stick or not. You know, I mean, the band might say, oh, I don't know if that's really right, you know, for whatever. And if that's the case, so yeah, you know, move on. There's plenty more where that came from. But, you know, once we decided, you know, like we've got, you know, four or five right now that are contenders for this next, you know, recording session we're going to do, then, you know, everybody's focused on it and working on their parts, and, you know, we get in, hash it out, you know, get it all doctored up so it's tight, and get ready to record it.
Yeah, because I know that, you know, you're probably a little bit like me as far as guitar playing, where, you know, I know that if I'm just sitting here alone with my guitar and I'm trying to come up with stuff, and then I got to program drums and stuff, I don't seem to get as much done as I do when I would have, like, my drummer sitting there and be like, hey, I got this great beat, and he'd be, you know, doing the beat, and all of a sudden you go, bing, idea, and you lock into it. And I know that talking to Vinny or people that work with Vinny, that they would always say, oh, yeah, Vinny comes in, he's got this, oh, I got this groove, listen to this, and the next thing you know, everyone plays along with it. So that's why I was asking about kind of the change and how you guys were writing for the album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, even with the thing is, when we started with Vinny, he had, like, I don't know how many, I think it was like 12 drum tracks that he had recorded for download purposes. And so it was the first time ever that I had taken finished drum tracks and recorded songs based on those drum tracks. I'd never done that before, you know, like, cause he played the drums without any, you know, song going on at all. He just played like, okay, here's where an intro would be. Here's where a verse would start. Here's where, you know, the pre-chorus would be. And here's where the chorus, you know, if you hit the cymbal, go to the chorus kind of thing. And he did a really good job of that. So I don't know, probably half of the first record was written that way around his drum parts that he had written before the band was even a band. I mean, I think his whole idea before this band even started was to start a band based on those drum tracks. And so he had Jimmy Bain come over and play some bass on there. And then he got in contact with me, and then I went over there and played some guitar on there. And that's how the band was born. I knew Dewey, you know, and then we wound up with Rex after Jimmy didn't work out. But yeah, that was basically the foundation of the whole band was, you know, Vinny's drumming that way. So, you know, and unfortunately he got busy and, you know, it didn't work out, but yeah, it's different, you know, it's not different for me. It's actually more of the same, because before I met Vinny, this basically is how, you know, I'd write all the stuff I ever wrote was mostly by myself, and then bring it to the band and then work it up from there, and so on and so forth. Right. But I do miss that. You know, it is fun to jam with a drummer and just come up with stuff, you know, because it's inspiring.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, Mark, there's one question I definitely want to ask you before we let you go. What was the first thought that came into your mind when Rex said he wanted to do a Pantera song?
I was pretty excited, man. I'm a big Pantera fan. And, you know, I remember when Vinny told me that he was thinking about calling Rex to play bass, you know, I was like, what? it was definitely a thrill. And, you know, we've been fortunate that, you know, like we played Ride for Dime down in Dallas a while back. And Rita, you know, Dime's girl, has been a huge help to us. Has helped us out selling merchandise and, you know, done all kinds of stuff for us. And, you know, we needed a place to rehearse when we were in Dallas before we did that show. And she's like, why don't you just rehearse down here at the house? So we went down there and rehearsed in the studio where they recorded Far Beyond Driven and all that stuff, you know, you know, Damage Plan record, all that stuff was all recorded there. And it's just like, wow, holy smoke, you know, and so humbling to actually be there and have Rex there and Rita and everybody and just, you know, to see all that stuff and think of all the stuff that went down there, you know, it's kind of overwhelming as a fan, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, super thrill. And playing the Pantera stuff with Rex is a huge thrill. I remember we played at, was it Rock on the Range? It was Rock on the Range. And we played early. I don't know, it was like noon or something, really early. But so we're getting ready to go up there, and Phil comes over. And he's standing around backstage, and I'm like, oh, no way. So we go to do Mount for War, and he comes out and does the song with us. Wow. Took over, like, after, like, the second verse or something. And he walks by, and I'm standing up there playing, and I'm looking over at Rex and Phil, and I'm just like, no way. This is happening right now.
Nice. Wow. That just blows my mind. I mean, I've seen pictures of, you know, of the studio and stuff at Daryl's place. And I mean, you just look at that and it just says Daryl everywhere you look. The pictures I saw, it was almost, just, you know, as if he was just there yesterday kind of thing. And so I can just imagine like how overwhelming that must have been for you to walk into that studio.
Oh man, it was so cool. And yeah, they even let me play his VW Slime guitar.
Oh, my God.
Happened to be there at the show. And we did walk, and I played his guitar, and I was like, wow, man, this is just unbelievable, you know? And so it's a big honor. And, you know, Rita, Rex, they're both super cool, you know? And, and all the other, you know, there's a bunch of other folks that are friends, you know, down there, and they're all really great too. And I miss Texas I wish we could play there more often because there's so many cool people down there. But yeah, it's been a super humbling and exciting experience, man. You know, having Rex around and getting a chance to, you know, play those songs and see those things, you know, it's super big honor, you know, to be there, you know, even just as a fly on the wall, when you start to hear the stories come out, you know, of back in the day, it's like, wow, that is so cool, man.
Yeah. You know? And you know what else is cool too is definitely, you know, the thing that says that you're doing it right is that, you know, I think for some people that, you know, a band that might try to go out there and do that, even, you know, even with Rex in the band, is, you know, you'd get all the trolls coming out and slinging the crap about you and stuff. But I have seen absolutely nothing like that at all about you guys going out and doing Pantera songs. It's just always been like so happy that they're doing it, or it sounds great, or whatever else. So I think that really says something about how people respect how you guys are doing it.
Cool. I hope that's true. I think Dewey sings the hell out of it. You know, he's a great singer. A totally underrated. I mean, he's a new guy on the block, you know, as well. But he's got a great voice, man. And he can sing that Pantera stuff pretty well. And, you know, so I hope that factors in, because, you know, I think Dewey needs to get a chance. I'm glad that people are giving him a chance. Let's do it that way.
Yeah.
Great singer.
Yeah, I definitely. I know when we talked to both to Rex and to Johnny, and one of the things that Richie kept talking about was just like how incredible Dewey's voice sounds, and what a step up it was from the first album to Revolution, that his voice just really, I mean, took over on that second album.
Yeah, thank you. I think so too. You know, we had a lot more time to work on the second record, so he had a lot more time to work as well. Mm. And he contributed a lot more writing-wise too, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's come a long way even since then, since the recording of that record, and has had a lot of opportunities to grow as a singer. And, you know, we were just recording demos the other day, and he hadn't been in front of a mic for, oh man, we'd had some time off, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been writing individually, but we haven't really been getting together too much. But he blew the dust off, and it was like, wow, all right, you know, it's on. You know, he's sounding great, you know, just on the demos. So yeah. I can't wait to get in the studio and do it for real.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. It's so cool when you get someone who's like a real deal, like Dewey is. So that's awesome to hear. And we cannot wait to hear, you know, what you guys come out with next, whether it's a full album, or you guys are kind of doing it down style with three or four at a time, you know, EP kind of a thing. You know, any way we can get some more brand new KDH is fine with us.
Killer. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see, you know, honestly, I don't know what the future holds, but I know we're going to keep writing and we're going to keep recording and keep playing. So it's just a matter of when and how much, and, you know, all those factors, you know, can figure themselves out as far as I'm concerned, as long as we ain't stopping, and we're not.
Awesome. So, you know, before we let you go, as far as anybody wanting to keep up with Kill Devil Hill or with anything that you're doing as well, best places to head to online to do that?
It's killdevilhillmusic.com is what it is.
Okay.
And we've also got Facebook/killdevilhillmusic, and I've got a Facebook as well. It's just Facebook/my name, Mark Zabon. And, you can check us out on there, and we're actually working on a new website here. It's got a bunch of other stuff in the works right now, kind of behind the scenes, but So probably the best place to keep up with us is on there, and we'll be keeping up with that here shortly. Like I said, we've got a relaunch coming up with that, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in the works, you know, right now, but we're just kind of laying low on it, you know, and, you know, putting the stuff together, going to be in the studio, going to be, you know, kind of getting, hopefully we'll be out this summer is kind of the plan. So
awesome.
We'll see.
Awesome. And what about Twitter? Do you ever do a Twitter account at all?
Yeah, I do. I think it's KLLDVLHLL.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Account. Well, I tell you know, we really appreciate, as Richie said in the beginning, of you know, being able to reschedule and talk with us. And I'm certainly glad we were able to make this happen as well. Obviously, you're a great guest and love to have you come back on anytime, especially when the new stuff comes out and we get it in our ear holes and stuff and probably want to talk about it. We'd love to have you come back on and talk about the new stuff as it comes out if you want to do that. But we really do appreciate taking the time tonight to talk with us.
Sure. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you guys for having me. And you know, anytime, just hit me up. I'll be more than happy.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay, Mark. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine. You guys take care, all right?
All right, Mark.
Okay, Mark. Good night.
Thanks.
All right. See
bye.
You. Bye. Yep, bye.
Taste of some Kill Devil Hill there off the Revolution Rise album. That one is called Crown of Thorns. And great guitar work, of course, by the one and only Mark Zabon. And big thanks to Mark for coming on the show, spending so much time with us. And I'm sorry, brother, for taking so long to edit this one up and get it out to the people. And also, big thanks and shout out to Seeb from Ordnogan. And we did try so hard to try to make that one work. He even tried to hook up again during the week a few times, and it just wasn't happening. But I got to say, the guy put in a heck of a lot of effort in trying to get that one down. So how about everybody pay him back by going out and picking up a copy of Ravenhead, the brand new one from Ordnogan. So that is a wrap for another week of Focus on Metal. I have no idea what we're doing next week. I've got a crap load of stuff to choose from. Absolutely amazing interviews we've done lately. A few things I've done myself. Richie's got a solo interview with a very big name in music that he did recently. We got some Richie and myself duo interviews as well. Lots of stuff. Got discussion stuff that's all pieced together as well. A whole bunch of stuff. Just got to figure out what the hell I'm going to play next week. Think that Richie will be back down in the studio in the next few days, and maybe we'll just discuss it, figure out what the hell we're doing. But I promise you this, it will give you your weekly dose of hard rock and heavy metal. And speaking of giving you your dose of hard rock and heavy metal, just want to remind you that part two of my buddy Bob Nalbandian's incredible documentary, Inside L.A. Metal, The Pioneers of L.A. Hard Rock and Metal, featuring this week's guest, Joey Vera, is out. So either go up to the Metal Rock Films website or Amazon or wherever you get your metal DVDs and get part two of Inside Metal. And if you haven't gotten part one yet, get part one as well, because that is just the first part of a three-part trilogy that Bob is doing on LA Metal, and I happen to know that the second installment of that trilogy is well on its way. And did anyone mention that they also feature interviews with this week's guest, Joey Vera? So as I always say, you can keep up with us at focusonmetal.net as well as focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. And also, you know, you can always subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can get that iTunes link right off of Focus on Metal as well. So if you do that, you know, make sure you leave a comment, hopefully good comments, but I guess any comment would help us out, right? So that's it. Ain't no more for this week. Put the fork and knife down, take the napkin out of your lap, and leave the table gracefully with horns raised in the air. So for myself and Richie and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, as I always say, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next week, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.